Welkom, mijn naam is Esther van Rijswijk. En this podcast is brought to you by UBS Asset Management as part of a series on passive climate investing. Now, according to the latest UN IPCC climate report, the consequences of global warming and the interconnected damage to existential natural systems are worsening by the day. According to the report, it is not too late to act though, even though the consequences of global warming are already visible. I'll talk about the severeness of global warming, about the urgent need for action, and about how investors can contribute to a carbon-neutral world. And I'll do this with Willem Kioch. Willem is head of ETF and index fund investment analytics at UBS Asset Management. Now, welcome, Willem.
Good afternoon, Esther.
When it comes to the transition to net zero, we should all assume our responsibilities. Now, let's see what different players have done so far. Is it correct, Willem, to say that governments and companies have dragged their feet ever since the Paris Agreement that was signed in December 2015?
I think that considering that the Paris Agreement was signed more than 6 years ago, it does seem as time has slipped through our fingers a bit. As you mentioned in the intro, Esther, the IPCC still shows that there is a possibility to still transition to a two-degree world. But unfortunately, I think the window of opportunity is rapidly closing. The reduction that would have to happen in terms of global emissions is really drastic. And in order to stay consistent with a 1.5 or a 2 degree scenario, it would mean that essentially the world must halve emissions over the next decade to stand any chance of reaching a net zero emissions by the middle of the century. Now, if we break it down and look into the implied temperature rise, we clearly see that if we consider it on a regional basis, that developed markets clearly a bit better off than emerging markets. But essentially, all regions globally are currently missing a Paris alignment, and they are missing it by quite a wide margin. And if we go further and look into a corporate, from a corporate perspective, if we look at the listed companies that is in the MSCI ACWI IMI, now this is an index that has 9,000 constituents, we find that there is only about 10% of companies that are aligned with a 1.5 degree scenario. And if we take a more relaxed scenario like 2 degrees, we find that it is less than half of these companies are currently aligned.
Well, that's not a lot then. We should really speed them up. Having said that, regulators and the European Commission, for example, have not been idle. What type of actions did they undertake since the Paris Agreement?
Yeah, that is correct. I think we've seen since the Paris Agreement that there's been various work streams that have been kicked off within the European Commission. They've established a technical expert group that was basically responsible for creating the legislation around the minimum standards for climate transition benchmarks and Paris-aligned benchmarks. There has also been legislation published in terms of what index providers should do and how they should incorporate sustainability into their indices. And clearly, we've seen quite a lot of work around the EU taxonomy, in particular as to which kind of activities or economic activities can be marketed as sustainable investments. So if we look at this increased regulatory landscape, we see that with the introduction of the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, we're now heading towards the second level of disclosure, which is going to kick in the beginning of next year. And what this will do is it will require a lot of reporting, a lot of disclosure, but also a lot of transparency around what is actually measured and what is the outcome from these measurements in terms of sustainable products. Now, I think here, if we step back and say, yes, 6 years has gone by since the Paris Agreement, I think it is also becoming clear that you are slowly starting to see an alignment between investors, regulators, governments in how they are trying to come up with a more sustainable solutions for a more sustainable economic future.
And how about corporates? What's their role and how can and should they contribute to the transition towards net zero?
I think corporates will play an extremely important part in this whole transition to a more sustainable economic future. And this is essentially, it will happen through the decarbonization, not only of their business operations, but also of their products. So if we take a bit of a bottom-up approach, if we think about the TCFD framework that was put together and the recommendations that came out of the framework was that essentially financial market participants must understand, they must manage, and they must disclose their exposure to climate risks. And the important part here is if we focus more on the disclosure part or more the measurement part in terms of your emissions, it's clear that disclosure is going to be key. And what we are learning from the Science Based Targets Initiative is that essentially we've seen quite a lot of corporates adopting science-based targets. We now have more than 1,000 companies across, I think, something like 60 countries that do have science-based targets. And this is clearly a huge step in the right direction. Because now, once a company has set these targets, they need to be measured accordingly. And essentially, if they somehow do not fulfill these requirements or these targets that they set themselves, then they will lose the Science-Based Targets Initiative accreditation. I think what's been very interesting is this development around how corporates are looking at setting targets. So initially, I think a lot of corporates were setting 2-degree targets or even above 2-degree targets. And this has really changed in the last 2 to 3 years, where there has been a clear focus now on actually setting more stringent 1.5-degree Celsius targets. And this really plays also into what we've seen around the net zero emissions that has been set by various, not only corporates, but also by countries. Essentially, this whole movement, I can say, has become mainstream. And essentially, you can see that even as recent as 2019, you only had about 15 or 16% of corporates setting any net zero targets. And by 2021, this is now changed dramatically to where there's over 70% of companies that are committing to net zero targets. So there's clearly been a paradigm shift in terms of how companies or corporates are setting targets and setting more stringent targets. So I would say there it looks like we're definitely on the right track.
Okay, so the targets are there and they are over 70%. That's of what type of companies?
So usually these will be large companies, right? I think we need to understand that if you look at what goes into, first of all, assessing what kind of science-based target you should apply for, and then how you want to set these targets and strategies throughout the corporation, you clearly need a number of people to work on these targets. And I think what makes it interesting is usually you would see that the very large corporates would start. They have a lot of manpower. They have dedicated departments looking into sustainable investment, looking at how they set up their SI policies and how they set up their targets. But what is more important, I would say, is that we're seeing that these targets are set actually globally. So this is not only coming out of the EU, for example, or from huge corporations in the US, but essentially we're seeing actually a lot of companies also out of Asia. And every year you see numerous companies adding from these regions that are, say, a bit behind the curve as compared to Europe. So I would rather take it from the positive side to see that this is actually a combined global effort and not only the EU having to do the heavy lifting here.
Okay, so the targets are there. The movement is in the right direction. But then a lot of money is needed. I saw this report of McKinsey and I see all these numbers. But they said that only spending on physical assets on the course to net zero would reach about $275 trillion US dollars by 2050. I'm sure you have a lot of numbers for us too, and they're all huge. Now, one of the UN climate conferences, COP26, one of the goals is to mobilize capital for a sustainable economy. Why doesn't that happen by itself? Why do we need an intervention here?
I think that's actually a very good question, Esther. And there's actually quite a simple answer to it. If you want to mobilize this kind of capital, I mean, these numbers are mind-boggling, right? This is not 1 or 2 billion that we're talking about. It really means that at some other point, you know, corporates can do something. They can kick off certain projects, sustainable projects. But if we turn it around and say, you know, how can investors help? Then I think we're slowly starting to understand what the game plan of the European Union has been. And that has been to essentially say, we want to transition from the current economic environment to a more sustainable economic environment. And by all of these work streams that they've kicked off, by all of the EU taxonomy that they've put in place, they essentially kind of put a roadmap there to show what the path from today's economy to a more sustainable economy is going to be. And where the financial engineering part comes in is then clearly to create solutions that investors can invest in that will facilitate in this flow of capital. Because clearly the aim is to have an orderly transition from where we are today to where we want to be in the future. And this orderly transition needs to be based upon good investment products. And as we're seeing now, that there are numerous Paris-aligned benchmarks. Every ETF provider has Paris-aligned benchmarks. Every index provider by law has to have Paris-aligned benchmarks. Clearly, the products are now coming online and it is then becoming available to investors. And when they invest in these kind of products, this will then assist with this capital flow to help with this transitioning part.
If you make it really explicit, so what is the role of the asset management industry in creating this sustainable economy?
So I think that's a very good question. So if we look at what the asset management industry can do, the asset management industry is there to facilitate flow of funds. And what is crucial from an asset management perspective is to have a variety of products on our shelves that allows investors to pick the right product for where they are in their transitioning at this point in time. This may sound relatively simplistic, but if we think about it, not all corporates are at the same point in time. Some have already looked into climate change, you know, 2 decades ago. Some are only starting to do it today. The same goes with governments around the world. But from an asset management perspective, we essentially view our clients as having a journey towards a more sustainable future. And we provide them products at various stages of that journey that they can then invest into to help them also to meet their requirements. Because as we've mentioned, with all of these corporates now setting net zero emission targets, they would have to meet these targets at some point in time. And if you look at big portfolios, these portfolios have to decarbonize. They need to invest in the right kind of products that can bring their overall portfolio to a certain temperature pathway. And essentially by providing our clients with a mix of products, they can then build up a solution that will take them towards their commitments that they have made in terms of net zero.
I see. So it's all about creating the right product for them to reach their goals. Okay, but so how about asset owners? They also have a key role to play. How can they assist in the transition?
I think asset owners have really a key role to play in this whole transition. And if we make it more practical again and think, what can an asset owner do? I mean, first of all, they can increase their exposure towards companies that are setting credible net zero targets. So essentially, they can use something like the Science Based Targets Initiative as a kind of a guide to see which companies have credible net zero commitments, which companies have set science-based targets, and which companies have not set. Because then that clearly shows you already there that there is a differentiation between companies. I think engagement is not only a buzzword, but clearly, if you want to have a major impact, you need to go to the heaviest emitters in our economy, and you need to have engagement with them in order to try and get them to transition their thinking in terms of their products, in terms of their operations, on how they can become more sustainable. And I think this is really a crucial part where you can have major wins in terms of carbon footprint reduction. And then I think finally, they can also really divert their capital towards the kind of businesses that are providing green opportunities. So essentially looking at providing solutions for climate change. And then you can also, or they can reduce their exposure towards companies that are essentially massively exposed to climate risks or exposed to stranded assets, for example. So this really puts it into perspective because, as you mentioned, this study from McKinsey showing how much money needs to be invested to get us to net zero. But we also need to understand that there are a lot of businesses that carry substantial risk. If we think about the carbon tax, for example, energy companies are particularly susceptible to running enormous risks that are in your portfolio. And this needs to be addressed where you start reducing your exposure to these kind of risks that at some point in time may really affect your portfolio very negatively.
I see. Now, it's quite clear that the role for the asset management industry is enormously important. What's going to be their main challenge? Where is it going to be really hard?
I think it's a hard question for everybody, if I have to answer it very honestly. I think, as we've mentioned, corporates have a role to play, regulators have a role to play, governments have a role to play, asset management have a role to play. But if we step back again, and as we mentioned before, the European Commission is really trying to reallocate capital from current economic environment or models towards something that is more sustainable. And essentially, with this first step in legislating around Paris-aligned benchmarks, we clearly see that they've set a minimum standards in terms of what they would say a Paris-aligned benchmark should not invest in, and what is the aim or the objective of a Paris-aligned benchmark. And if we look at something like the MSCI Climate Paris-Aligned Indexes, it's clear that the setup there has been not only to meet these minimum requirements, but also to go above and beyond it. And usually where it all starts, the requirement, you must reduce the carbon footprint of the portfolio by 50%. You have to have a year-over-year self-decarbonization. So here we will self-decarbonize by 10% annually, with the aim of being 1.5 degree compliant already by 2030. So this is quite an aggressive temperature pathway that we set ourselves on. But I think it is important that if we do the work earlier, it's much easier than to do it later. And then, of course, it's important to be aligned, as I've mentioned before, with the TCFD. It's really important that everybody understands what their role is in this transitioning towards a more sustainable economy. And clearly, then, to kind of highlight where are the risks. So we can talk about policy risk. We've mentioned carbon taxes before, but also thinking about more climate-related risks, which corporates are exposed to these, and how you can address that. So essentially, you're trying, in a simplistic way, to capture who are going to be the winners from climate change and who's going to be the leaders in climate change. And within a systematic solution in an index, you clearly want then to overweight your exposure to these winners or the companies that will provide you with solutions. And then you want to start reducing your exposure to the companies that are really going to face headwinds in terms of climate change. So what we like to say is if you invest in something like these Paris-aligned benchmarks, you are essentially an investor who's trying to stay at the forefront of transitioning. You want to invest in a holistic solution that not only looks at the risks, but also at the opportunities. And then you want to favor basically today, the players today that are going to be the winners of tomorrow's economy.
Okay, I think we need to dive a bit deeper into the indices and how you use them. You've mentioned the Paris-aligned indices, but how does this work? Because somehow it sounds to me still as an active management. So maybe I misunderstood. How are you using the indices?
I think that's a very good question. If we step back and think how an index is built, you create a methodology or an investment solution. And since indexes are systematic by nature, you have to build it on data. If we then look at a company like MSCI, which is a world-renowned data company, we see that they have not only ESG data, but they also have climate data. And where the confusion sometimes comes is that active managers say they have lots of analysts looking into the data, looking into the companies, but so do these data providers. And they have essentially specialist research team that would evaluate the company, let's say, from the more traditional ESG perspective, but also specialist companies or specialist analysts that are focusing on climate data and climate research. And this is very important because if you look at something like a climate value at risk, that essentially tells you what are the climate-related risks that you are running in your portfolio over a long period of time. Here we're talking about 15 years into the future. You clearly need to have very, very specialist resources looking into this and evaluating where a company would fall in this whole spectrum. So from a passive perspective, I would say that the process of identifying these leaders and laggards are, I would say, at worst on par with active management, but at best, because it is really looked into by specialist teams, we need to understand that this data is very robust. There's a lot of thought that has gone into it. And essentially, we look on it on a very granular level on a per company basis. So if you think about a company like MSCI, as I said earlier in their ACWI IMI, they have 9,000 companies. And essentially, we have on the 9,000 biggest companies on the planet, we have data for each and every one of these companies, not only from an ESG perspective, but also from a climate perspective.
Okay, well, so my last question was going to be about the main critique on passive strategies based on net zero indices, is that there's no way that they can actually check or verify the real environmental impact of the companies in the index. But I think basically you are saying we can. Aren't you?
That's correct. Not only can we identify these companies, but we can also measure it, right? So if you do analysis on a company, this is not a once-off that you do and then never do it again. Essentially, the companies are tracked over time. So very importantly, within this index, or the Climate Paris-Aligned Indices from MSCI, you essentially actually keep track also over the longer term. So, for example, is a company reducing its emissions year over year? You really want to be able to identify these companies that year after year, they keep to their targets, they reduce their emissions, and you would obviously want to recognize these companies. So you can build it into your methodology where you would overweight such companies. Then, of course, we also have to think about, we mentioned now a couple of times, how many companies are applying for science-based targets, how many companies have approved science-based targets. And there, the Science-Based Targets Initiative is an independent body that essentially works together with companies so that they can not only verify these science-based targets that a company has committed to, but there's also a second part. Clearly, they have to then measure whether a company is doing what it has said it will do. This becomes part of the auditing process. And essentially, if a company does not meet these targets that it set itself, or it doesn't follow these science-based targets, essentially, it will then lose its accreditation. And I think this is really important to also have this independent part that is looking at companies and saying, are these companies doing what they have publicly committed to do?
Great, thank you. Now, your website on the Paris-aligned ETFs states that what you do actually is you identify today the players of tomorrow's economy. Now, for those of us who don't get it immediately, why is that an advantage relevant for investors?
I think climate change is a massive task that is lying ahead of us. This is an unprecedented challenge that we as humanity face. And I think if we look at how the products are constructed that we have on our shelf, it's really about being sure or how do we identify the winners and losers of climate change. I mean, there's clearly going to be companies that will provide solutions that will help us in this battle against climate change. And there's clearly going to be companies that are facing severe headwinds in terms of their current operations. Whether they will be able to transition, we all hope so. Some may not. But ideally, we would like to indicate to our clients which are these winners and which are the losers. And within our products, we do that. It's really important to understand that we have holistic solutions because, as I mentioned before, we need to understand what would happen to a current portfolio if something like a carbon tax is introduced, for example. Then you need to understand which part of your portfolio is exposed to a carbon tax, and more importantly, what could this exposure be? So in some cases, this could be quite large risk numbers that you are running, and you are running it unwittingly. So I think it's really important to understand what the effect and a holistic effect on an investment portfolio is going to be. So by providing these kind of solutions, I think we provide our clients with the tools that they can use also within their strategies, how they are tackling climate change, how they are considering climate change, and how are they considering how they're going to become net zero and meet all of the commitments that they have made. So to summarize, I think climate change is clearly an enormous challenge that lies ahead of us. And by essentially providing some guidance to clients, I think this would help them in their process on how they transition to a more sustainable economy and how we all should try and transition to a more sustainable economy.
Thank you so much for being here. It was a pleasure talking to you. I've learned a lot. This episode was brought to you by UBS Asset Management as part of a series on climate Paris-aligned ETFs. Would you like to know more about the UBS Asset Management solutions because you want to stay at the forefront of the transition? Then please visit ubs.com/PAB. Thank you so much for listening.
Disclaimer. For marketing and information purposes by UBS. For professional clients or qualified investors only. UBS funds under Luxembourg, Swiss, German and Irish law. Before investing in a product, please read the latest prospectus carefully and thoroughly. The information and opinions contained in this document have been compiled, or arrived at, based upon information obtained from sources believed to be reliable and in good faith, but is not guaranteed as being accurate, nor is it a complete statement or summary of the securities, markets or developments referred to in the document. Members of the UBS Group may have a position in, and may make a purchase and or sale of any of the securities or other financial instruments mentioned in this document. Units of UBS funds mentioned herein may not be eligible for sale in all jurisdictions or to certain categories of investors and may not be offered, sold or delivered in the United States. The information mentioned herein is not intended to be construed as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any securities or related financial instruments. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results. The performance shown does not take account of any commissions and costs charged when subscribing to and redeeming units. Commissions and costs have a negative impact on performance. If the currency of a financial product or financial service is different from your reference currency, the return can increase or decrease as a result of currency fluctuations. This information pays no regard to the specific or future investment objectives, financial or tax situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient. The details and opinions contained in this document are provided by UBS without any guarantee or warranty and are for the recipient's personal use and information purposes only. This document may not be reproduced, redistributed or republished for any purpose without the written permission of UBS Asset Management Switzerland AG or a local affiliated company. Source for all data and charts, if not indicated otherwise, UBS Asset Management. This document contains statements that constitute forward-looking statements, including, but not limited to, statements relating to our future business development. While these forward-looking statements represent our judgments and future expectations concerning the development of our business, a number of risks, uncertainties, and other important factors could cause actual developments and results to differ materially from our expectations. More explanations of financial terms can be found at ubs.com/am-glossary. Copyright UBS 2021. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.